Intriguing developments for a UFO researcher who has decided to leave the field recently.
Well, yeah, he works on contract for the government. When I was in Ottawa, we did get together. We had a wonderful lunch together at a Chinese buffet. We talked about Canadian UFO history, right, which involves not only prime ministers, but other very prominent and well-known individuals. Shortly afterwards, he contacted me and he told me that he was approached by two gentlemen, as he described them. They basically told him that it would be in his best interest and in the interest of his career to avoid talking about this subject anymore and show any more interest in the subject. They knew of his work, They knew of his activities and interests, and they basically, I think, gave him an offer he couldn't refuse.
Strange days indeed. On Montreal's News Talk leader, CJAD 800, and News Talk 1010, CFRB in Toronto. To talk to Errol Bruce Knapp, call 1-866-866-7387.
And you can email us as well, SDI at virtuallystrange.net. This is program 303 in the current series. Coming to the end of year six doing this, I wonder how many more years we're going to have to do this before somebody ups and says, well, we know what's going on.
Let's hope it's not tomorrow.
Victor Vigiani in studio with me. We go out to the West Coast now, down to Seattle, Washington. And Peter Davenport, who's the director of the National UFO Reporting Center. Peter, it's a pleasure to have you back on the program again.
Well, thank you, Errol. It's a pleasure to be here. And do we have Victor on the line with us tonight, too, or is it just you and I?
No, he's right in studio here with
me. Good evening, Victor.
Good evening, Peter.
You have been a very busy man of late. I mean, not only with the staggering number of reports that your website collects, but you actually presented a paper at the MUFON Symposium in Denver earlier this month.
I did indeed, and it was a great pleasure. And you are correct, Earl. I'm busier than the proverbial paper hanger. Some days I wish it were not the case, and some days I wish it were not I who was seated in the seat. But that's what fate has dealt me, so that's what I put up with.
You and I belong to the same club, along with a few others, you know? It's our assignment whether we choose to accept it or not.
That's exactly the case. Some days I wish I had not accepted it. Mm-hmm. This, by the way, is about the 10th anniversary of the fateful phone call I made to Mr. Robert J. Gribble, the founder of the National UFO Reporting Center in Seattle. It was about July 26th, I believe it was, 1994. I heard he was considering shutting down the hotline, and I, just on a whim, Errol, I called Bob and said, gee, that's a job I would consider doing, and just faster than you can bat your eyes, he said, Peter, it's yours.
Congratulations, I think, on the 10th anniversary, Peter. And it's oddly enough, it was around this time 10 years ago that I shut down my little Atari computer. It was my first computer, having read the Mutual UFO Network's bulletin board systems stuff, saying to myself, I have to get in touch with MUFON. And 4 days later, out of the blue, MUFON called me. And so we have sort of similar stories there, talking about assignments that are ours, whether we choose to accept them or not. So the symposium, you presented an interesting paper, something that you had been considering for quite a while. Tell us about that, Peter
Well,
Davenport.
I'm delighted to have the opportunity to talk about it, because you're correct, Errol. This is a project that I first proposed to myself, really, back in January of 1995, naively thinking that just in a matter of months, I would have a system in place that would allow us ufologists to detect UFOs. Well, here we are about 9.5 years later, and we still haven't done it, but we're very much closer now. In a word, what I talked about in Denver just about 2 weeks ago today, it was, I was making my presentation right about this time, actually. I shared with the audience at the symposium my proposal for detecting UFOs, these things we call UFOs, I presume they are real, using a technique known as passive radar. Passive radar being a process whereby instead of projecting a radar beam and rotating it and trying to illuminate a target, you tune a receiver to a radio station that is some considerable distance from your receiver antenna, and you listen for reflected radio waves off something that might be in the atmosphere. That, in a nutshell, is what passive radar is. This came to me, I can almost tell you the exact date. It was the Friday before Martin Luther King weekend in January of 1995. I had been running the hotline for about 4 or 5 months at that point and actually panicked because of the amount of work that I had apparently saddled myself with. As I was seated here ruminating on the hotline and what we could do to change it, I said there must be technology in place already that is registering the presence of these things called UFOs. And then it hit me like a bombshell. I used to work in the venture investment industry. A company had come to us looking for investment capital, and they built radio equipment that could bounce a radio signal off the tail of a meteor in the atmosphere. And that was the beginning of a long, long project to build such a system that will detect not the tails behind meteors, but rather UFOs.
How easy is it to build this technology? Is it something that Victor and I could do, or any other listeners could do?
Absolutely. And that is the very attractive thing about this proposal, Errol, is that passive radar does not broadcast a signal. Again, rather, it uses signal that is already being broadcast, like a commercial television station signal or a commercial radio signal, exactly the type that you and I are sending out at this moment over the airwaves.
Right.
And you tune a receiver, probably a little more sophisticated than the receiver in your old 1962 Volkswagen. That type of receiver probably would be almost everything you need to capture the reflected radio signal. At that point, however, it becomes a little more complicated because you have to then analyze the signal you've received to extract information from it. And that requires a computer, requires specialized software. We are in the process of working on that issue right now. The great fortune I have had, however, in the recent past, is that I discovered a professor of electrical engineering at the University of Washington here in Seattle. His office is about 25 minutes walk from where I am presently seated. So he's very, very close to me.
Handy.
And he has built a passive radar system that operates at the University of Washington, not for detecting UFOs, but rather measuring the ionosphere as it changes throughout the day.
Mm-hmm.
But that system is easily adapted to doing other things, like detecting satellites that pass overhead. And if you can detect a satellite, of course, it's no great challenge to detect other targets that reflect radio waves.
What kind of antenna would this receiver have? Would it be a little dish with a focusing rod in it, or are we talking about a less sophisticated antenna for passive radar?
Interestingly, an even less sophisticated antenna would do just fine. All you need to do is to hear the reflected signal. The way you extract information from the reflected signal is by having more than one receiver on the ground. In fact, you would like to have at least three receivers tuned to the same radio signal that is being broadcast from, for example, 1,000 miles away.
Uh-huh.
So under ordinary circumstances, you are unable to hear the broadcast signal. If there's something in the atmosphere that is visible both to your antenna and to the transmitted signal or the antenna that is transmitting the signal, then that target, if it reflects radar waves, that is, if it has a metallic surface, will reflect the signal that is radiating out in all directions back down to the antenna on the ground.
Boy, this sounds like a perfect three-man tag team on the internet working on this stuff.
You're exactly correct.
Wow.
And you propel me to the end of my talk last Saturday, or two Saturdays ago, in which what I propose to the UFO community is that this is the perfect vehicle for establishing coordination and cooperation between all of the ufologists, serious-minded ufologists, mm-hmm. who are working in the field today. MUFON, the Fund for UFO Research, CUFOS in Chicago, our Canadian neighbors to the north. And what we can do is, with probably not more than half a dozen or so stations, receiver stations, we can cover the entire North American continent with regard to the detection of UFOs in the atmosphere above that land area and even beyond the atmosphere.
That sounds really promising, Peter Davenport. How far out can this radar look?
That's a very good question, and I have struggled with that question for many months. It turns out that how far you can see a target depends on the strength of the signal that is going out and also the characteristic of the target. For example, to boil it down to terminology that will help listeners who are not familiar with radar understand it, the question is tantamount to asking, well, how far can you see something with a flashlight? Well, it depends on how powerful your flashlight is, how narrow the beam might be reflected or constrained, whether the target is a light-colored target or a dark target. So there are many factors that determine the answer to that question, but I can give you an example of how far out we might be able to detect a UFO. If we assume a UFO, for example's sake, is about 10 meters in diameter, which seems to be about typical relative to what people report to us on a frequent basis, the U.S. Navy runs what, for all intents and purposes, is a passive radar system that stretches across the southern United States in a straight line from San Diego to a point in the state of Georgia. And they use this for detecting everything that is in orbit around our planet. They have to do this to identify everything that is orbiting, lest somebody manage to slip something into our airspace that we don't want to have there. It is rumored, and I cannot confirm this, all of this information I'm sure is highly classified by the U.S. Navy and the North American Air Defense Command, but it is rumored that this system is powerful enough that it can detect a target 10 centimeters in diameter at a range of about 15,000 nautical miles above the surface of the Earth. Whoa. Now, that is the equivalent of detecting a metallic target about the size of a grapefruit at a distance equal to approximately twice the diameter of the planet Earth.
That's incredible. Are they putting out a special signal from a transmitter somewhere so that they can do the passive radar?
Yes, indeed. In fact, what I have done is post my paper that I wrote for this MUFON symposium 2 weeks ago on our website. People can see an illustration of a map showing all of the U.S. Navy facilities that stretch across the southern United States. But between San Diego and Georgia, they have three transmitters, I believe I'm correct in saying, and the other facilities are the listening stations, such that they are able to broadcast what appears to be sort of a fan of electromagnetic radiation up into the air and beyond even the atmosphere. And whenever a satellite passes through that very thin area of that is being illuminated by this radio beam, it reflects the beam down and the receiver stations on the ground pick up that signal. What I have proposed is that we ufologists
piggyback
exactly. We could use that transmitted signal and we could post our listening devices, our receivers, on either side of that straight line, anywhere up to maybe 500 miles either side of the straight line, and we could listen for exactly the same signals that the U.S. Navy is picking up. And because our system is totally passive, again, I emphasize that a passive radar system requires only a receiver that is tuned to a signal that is being broadcast, perhaps by somebody else, as you correctly state, a TV signal or a radio signal, and you simply listen for when it is reflected back down to ground level. As perhaps you can tell, I am extremely excited about this.
You're talking, Peter, about receiving information that the U.S. Navy may be, at this point in time, receiving covertly.
Yep.
You're saying that we can receive the same kind of detailed information.
Absolutely. You've stated correctly, Victor. It is something that I believe our government does not want to hear.
I bet they don't.
Or listen
fact,
to.
Yeah.
I will share with our listeners tonight exactly what I shared with my audience in Denver 2 weeks ago.
Can we save that until after the news break? Peter Davenport is with us. We'll catch up with Peter on the other side because he be motoring tonight.
We were all quite pleased with ourselves that we've been able to photograph all three stages of power flight of a missile. And there, coming out of the fog, was the missile that we had photographed from 186 miles away. And one-third of that rocket filled the frame from that distance. Suddenly, from the left-hand side of the screen, something else flew into the frame. Fired a beam of light. It struck the dummy warhead. Flew up on top of the warhead, hit it again with another beam of light, flew off toward the right-hand side of the screen. It's doing a circle, if you can imagine, circling our warhead. Fired another beam of light at it, which struck the warhead, continued its arc, came underneath it, and fired a fourth beam of light, then came back 360 degrees and flew back out of the frame in the same direction it had come.
And what speed is this warhead traveling that this thing is flying around and
it's
around?
It's going 8 or 9,000 miles an hour by this point.
8 or 9,000 miles an hour.
And accelerating.
Strange days indeed. On Montreal's News Talk Leader, CJAD 800, and News Talk 1010, CFRB, in Toronto. To talk to Errol Bruce Knapp, call 1-866-866-7387.
Or email us, sdi@virtuallystrange.net. The voice of former United States Air Force Lieutenant in charge of the U.S. Air Force Film Unit at Vandenberg Air Force Base, where they were test-firing missiles out over the Pacific, describing what he saw on film that they shot with a brand-new telescope and a brand-new camera rig one day.
One of the, if not the most provocative, anecdotal pieces of information that we have about what's going on in the skies. And it was absolutely astounding.
It was a jaw-dropper is what that one was. And, of course, we're all loonies. We're all wearing tinfoil hats. And,
you got it.
And we're all members of a cult, and we're all members of religious cults, apparently.
Oh, religious cults.
That's the latest word. Did you know that, Peter Davenport of the National UFO Reporting Center?
I didn't know it for sure, but I've suspected it, well, and your statements have just confirmed it.
You heard it here. It's official.
With no genuflections.
Oh, God, don't you just love these so-called scientists?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes.
And if they have PhDs, watch out.
Oh, yes.
There's something that happens to a person's mind, I observe, except in rare cases. Something happens in which people, once they've gotten that degree, no longer even have to look at data to be able to give you the correct answer. It is a remarkable statement on an education, isn't it?
Isn't it, though? It's like Carl Sagan pontificating on abductions and abductees.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, who better to do that, huh?
Interestingly, it brings to mind some emails I've sent to Canada recently to a gentleman who is operating a passive radar system up in your neck of the woods, and he does not even return emails that he received. Just like me, interested in the technical details of his...
Is he at one of our centers of learning, higher learning?
Higher learning, I would, yes, indeed. I don't want to embarrass the individual or...
Go ahead.
No, I really shouldn't.
He's not going to give you any information anyway, so you may as well.
That's true, but... Boy, it is infuriating. Highly trained public servants decide that they don't have to serve us mere citizens or subjects.
Oh, yeah. it happens a lot, seemingly, and you're absolutely right. It's crazy making for a lot of people. Yeah. So let's go back now. We're talking the passive radar signals being sent out by the United States Navy from three different centers are used by United States listening centers to passively detect anything that's flying around us in the atmosphere, above us, and for a goodly long distance out, twice the diameter of the Earth. Now, you're suggesting that ufologists can use the transmitter and pick up on the fringes of this fan-like transmission that happens. In the first break, when you had first described this, I said to Victor, yeah, and you know what's going to happen is that the ufologists are going to get readings on this, and then the powers that be are going to turn around and say, no, your readings are wrong, you're not doing it properly. However, if ufologists are using the United States Navy transmitters and picking up on those particular areas that those signals are transmitted at, then how can they possibly be wrong if they detect anything?
Yes, it's a very good point. And another point I would make is that this system has been operating for at least 30 years that I can calculate, and it may even be as many as 40 years now. And that gives us some idea of how many UFOs the U.S. government surveillance system has detected in that amount of time. It's just inconceivable to me, given the number of UFO reports that come to me and to all other ufologists, that they are not picking up these objects with that system. And it tells us yet again that, at least in the case of the U.S. government, perhaps line is too strong a word, but they certainly are not going out of their way to share this information with us mere U.S. citizens. That is wrong, in my opinion, and we're going to beat them at their own game if we can.
And I think we will probably do it fairly elegantly, too, and with a great deal of simplicity, if we can just agree on what portion of the sky we're going to look at.
Absolutely.
It's kind of hard to get consensus among UFO researchers.
Well, that's true, but the point I made during my talk is this might be just an excellent vehicle for ufologists to start working on a common project that will produce fruit and will resolve this issue. Once the first station has been built, and I'm guessing from this point forward, but once that first station is built, it should be almost a cookie-cutter process to set up, erect other stations. All we have to do is share the algorithm or the computer code, and it requires nothing more than an FM receiver, an antenna, and a good computer with the right software, and access to a very accurate time system, which is very easily done with the GPS system.
Yes,
now.
And even the atomic clock system on the web is pretty darned accurate, too.
Absolutely.
Now, Peter, I don't want to throw a wet blanket on this, but I just want to provide the other side of the argument. If we have this technology and the United States government or whoever has been involved in it for the past, as you say, 30 years, and whatever craft these happen to be from wherever they are, would it not be possible for their technology to somehow escape the technology that we have?
You're talking about the UFOs somehow escaping or avoiding reflecting the radio beam.
I'm just trying to figure out that if they've come here all this way to be innocuous in their own way, how can some little simple signal that we have interfere with whatever their motivations happen to be if they have the technology to avoid it?
Very good question. And the answer requires a little more time than the question did, but we know from some cases that some UFOs reflect electromagnetic radiation or radio waves. We know that because, one, we can see them, so they must be reflecting electromagnetic radiation in the visible range. And also there are some notable cases in which UFO has been picked up by a classical active radar system. In fact, I have several cases on file in which we have requested the radar data from the Federal Aviation Administration and received it, and the radar shows the anomalous object or UFO quite clearly. So at least some of them we know reflect electromagnetic radiation.
With regular radar?
The radar.
Yeah.
The nice thing about a passive radar system is that since it is passive, nobody would know what frequency you are working on. So the UFO sees all of the sources of electromagnetic radiation emanating from the surface of the Earth, but it would not know which one or collection of those sources of radio waves is being listened to when it is reflected back down to the Earth.
See, the way I visualize this is, you know, when you're driving along in a car and you get the stick on the fence effect with FM, it goes tick-tick-tick-tick.
Yes.
It's like taking a stick and rubbing it down a fence.
Yes.
And the reason for that is because the signal is bouncing off solid objects around you. So passive radar, the way that works is it's not a radio wave that's being deliberately aimed at you. It's just if you're in something solid, a solid body bounces a signal back.
That's right.
You know? So it's so elegant, I can't believe it. I'm dazzled by it.
There's no interruption in how the object can be picked up.
Yeah.
It's no different from lighting a candle and illuminating the interior of a room. It is a constant illumination, and if something...
walks between the candle and the wall, you get a shadow.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how does this affect the stealth technology that, you know, the United States has? This seems to be something that's a real issue with how the signal sends out signals to pick up the stealth technology.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
Well, it would pick the stealth up. It would
immediately.
Anything solid, a flock of geese, it would pick up.
Yes. It would pick up geese. It picks up the ionosphere, aircraft. It picks up everything, really. And you're right, Victor. This is a threat to stealth aircraft. In fact, it is rumored, I understand, it is rumored that the F-117 stealth fighter that was shot down in Bosnia was detected by the Bosnians using a passive radar system. Stealth aircraft are called stealthy only because of the shape of the aircraft. The aircraft, when it is illuminated with a radar beam, does not reflect the beam back to the source. It deflects the beam in another direction. But with a passive radar system, stealth aircraft can be picked up by a passive radar system. In fact, if people would like to read my paper and visit some very interesting websites on passive radar, I've listed about 8 or 10 URLs or websites. The top one is an article from ABC News that points out why stealth aircraft are at risk for being detected by a passive radar system.
And you can get to Peter Davenport's post to the UFO Updates email list the day before yesterday via tonight's program listing. Go to virtuallystrange.net and click Strange Days Indeed. Tonight's program listing will take you there to that post, and it will also take you to the National UFO Reporting Center's website. We will come back and pick it up the other side with Peter Davenport in studio with me, Victor Vigiani.
There was a study commissioned by NASA of a group of prestigious Americans from all walks of life, academia, politics, law, economics, etc. It is called Proposed Studies on the Implications of Peaceful Space Activities for Human Affairs. It was prepared by the Brookings Institution in Washington as a report to NASA and subsequently was communicated on April 18, 1961 by NASA to the U.S. Congress Committee on Science and Astronautics of the House of Representatives of the 87th Congress First Session. What's important about the Brookings report is what you read on page 215. There is the beginnings of an interesting discussion titled Implications of a Discovery of Extraterrestrial Life. It says, anthropological files contain many examples of societies sure of their place in the universe which have disintegrated when they had to associate with previously unfamiliar societies espousing different ideas and different life ways. Others that survived such an experience usually did so by paying the price of changes in values and attitudes and behavior. What the document was warning was that if NASA were to discover extraterrestrials or even their artifacts, the social consequences conceivably could lead to the, quote, disintegration of civilization. And what you have to ask, I had to ask myself over and over and over again, Hoagland, are you crazy? How could anyone have missed this?
I occasionally think how quickly our differences worldwide would vanish if we were facing an alien threat from outside this world. And yet, I ask you, is not an alien force already among us? What could be more alien to the universal aspirations of our peoples than war and the threat of war?
Strange days indeed on News Talk 1010 CFRB in Toronto and Montreal's News Talk leader, CJAD 800.
Before we broke for news earlier on, but you were going to perhaps get into something that you had said to the delegates at the symposium, or did we cover that off already in the course of the last 10 or 15 minutes?
Well, after I had discussed the passive radar and how it could be used for detecting UFOs, I think the important thing I said after that was this could be a vehicle for getting everybody to cooperate, which would allow us to cover the entire North American continent with just a handful of stations. And the one thing I didn't say is, wouldn't it be ironic if the North American Air Defense Command came to our group once these systems were in place and said to us, gee, wouldn't you like to feed your data into our air defense system so we could see what is going on a real-time basis over the North American continent? Well, I present that possibility in a jocular sense.
Understood.
But I would like to add, one thing that is not so funny is the fact that if my theory is correct, and I have had many, many PhDs, and in fact, just a few weeks ago, I got a call from a gentleman who works for an intelligence agency on the east coast of the United States, who said, Peter, I've seen the abstract to your paper, and I am calling you to let you know that you are going down the right track for detecting UFOs.
Ooh.
That was a rather interesting phone call. But wouldn't it be interesting if with just a very simple passive radar system, we scooped the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence project, which has spent hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars since 1960, when it was started by Frank Drake, to prove that these things we call UFOs are real. We do it for a few thousand or tens of thousands of dollars, and SETI has wasted hundreds of millions in the pursuit of the same.
And that nice Microsoft's Mr. Allen has just poured a bajillion dollars into building this multiple dish wireless telescope array, the Allen Radio Telescope. Whoa. It's starting to sound as if we're getting some kind of interference on your line, Peter.
It does indeed. I can hear it too. I have no idea what it is, but maybe we inadvertently have gotten a passive radar system working out of my telephone.
Trying to figure out what we're talking about.
Oh, we are just about out of time together, Peter, and we didn't even touch on some of the more interesting sightings that you've had reported to you lately. I want to thank you very much for letting us know about this passive radar. I'm sure that there are people listening tonight who would be interested in learning more and will doubtlessly get in touch with you over the next few weeks. We seem to have some fairly strong connections between us, so I think we can probably shake out some sort of chain of listening posts.
I think that's a guaranteed possibility, and we will keep people abreast of this project on our website, and I no doubt will be back on Strange Days Indeed.
Indeed you shall, sir. And thank you for being on it this time, and we look forward to talking to you again, Peter. It's always a pleasure. And
It is my pleasure, too, and thanks so much for the time, Errol, and we will talk again soon, and good night to you, Victor, as well.
Good night, Peter.
Good night, Peter Davenport, to the National UFO Reporting Center. We will continue. James Fox, the exec producer of a wonderful UFO documentary, Out of the Blue, will join us.
Strange Days Indeed, UFO News Talk Radio.